Today in conversation with Michaela Russo, a lecturer at the University of Michigan of Spanish and Italian. Welcome to the show. We're here for another episode of We Art, We Speak. We've known each other for quite a while, actually.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's kind of a no-brainer. I was like, you obviously have to be on the show. So tell me a little bit about who you are. Not that I don't know, but for the folks who don't know.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I'm so happy to be with We Are What We Speak. I actually have to say that I used this slogan recently in a conference, and I was so proud of that. Something about me. So I'm not going to tell you how old I am. So we are what we feel. Exactly. Yeah, so I'm a Gemini from Italy. My family is from the south of Italy. And then I was born in the north because my family, my parents moved when they were very young. They looked for a job. And so I was born in the north near Venice. I grew up there. So actually, in terms of linguistic things, I guess that I had my first, you know, encounter with languages and, you know, the feelings that language brings to you in that early age. Because, so since my family's from the south, in Italy, we have a lot of different accents and different dialects.
Mm-hmm.
Depending on the regions, but even depending on different cities and different towns. And to the point that if somebody from the south speaks in dialect and talks with somebody from the north who speaks their dialect, they're not going to understand each other. Like literally if they are two different languages. So it's so funny because when I was very, very little before going to primary school, so my parents were very young, so I was the first child among their friends. So I didn't really have, you know, much contacts with, you know, children from my age. They were locals, mm-hmm. let's say, from the north. So my parents had a lot of friends from the south. All their friends were from the south. I don't know. They made a little colony from southern people. So my dad really liked to record me since the first sounds that I used to make. Listening back to this very recent recordings, so I had a very strong accent from the south, which I completely lost, you know, growing up.
Yeah.
But it was so funny and so weird. So the accent was so strong and was completely different from the accent of the, you know, the children of the same age, you know, from the north. So I remember that going to school, like the first year, I was just, you know, I really felt this different accents. Like I really felt that I was not from there. And so I guess that throughout the year, I will just adapt my accent. But then every time, then summertime, we went back to the south, I will mm-hmm. get this super strong southern accent. So I guess that I always had this kind of dancing, I don't know, accent. And then for, you know, when I was 19, I went to Rome to do my university career. And then in Rome, you know, they have a very, very strong accent. And then I completely picked the accent from there. And then this is the accent that I still have from Rome. I have no family from Rome. So every time that I come back home, I have this, and I speak Italian, I have this strong accent. And my mom is like, do you still speak like that, even if, you know, you've been living in the U.S. for, I don't know, more than 10 years? Like, I don't know. I guess it's my adoption language. I don't know how to call it. But yeah, that's really, really funny. But still, I remember the first classes that I took at the university, because at that time, I had the same experience as in my childhood. But then my accent was from the north.
Yeah.
So I was taking classes and I remember so clearly, you know, raising my hand to ask a question, started speaking, and then the silence around. And I felt like, oh, you know, like in a kind of echoing chamber, because I felt like my accent, my northern accent, was like boom, 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 like echoing in the room. And I would feel so shy. So I guess, again, this probably, I don't know, it turned on some kind of mechanism that I then switched. Mm. And since then, I've been a Roman speaker. I don't know. But still, when I speak in Italian here, because here I teach Spanish, both Spanish and Italian. When I teach Italian, I don't have an accent. I try to be very clean. So usually people don't understand where I...
What does that mean?
Well, I know. That doesn't mean anything. Well, I do have an accent, but that people can't really guess from where. And then actually that happens a lot when I teach Spanish.
Yeah, that's something I'm familiar with. Yeah, depending on the context. You sound like you're from over here or from over here.
Yeah, totally. Mm-hmm. That has to do with the fact that, you know, so it's not my native language, Spanish. So I learned Spanish mainly speaking with people. And so I guess I picked, you know, the accent. Mm-hmm. So I spent so many years in Texas. I didn't realize, but I picked a very strong Mexican accent back then. And then there was a time here. Well, I have a lot of friends from Chile here. And then there was also a time that I was dating a Chilean guy. And I guess I picked a strong Chilean accent. While in Italy, I studied Spanish from Spain. So I cannot say that I had an accent from Spain, but definitely I learned some of the, you know, the ways of speaking from Spain.
Yeah.
So I feel like I'm a melting pot of accents, languages. I don't know.
That's so cool, though. And I mean, I know a lot of this about you, but I just feel like there's going to be a lot of people who relate to this story, right?
Yeah.
There is a concept, and you might know it, but this idea that we shift the way we sound in order to be more comprehensible to other listeners, right? And so it's this idea that you're going to start sounding a little bit more like the people you're speaking with or around. And I don't know so much about the like science behind this concept, but a part of it is so that you can be better understood. Part of it has to be also acceptance, right?
I was about saying that. Yeah, I feel like there might be like a double movement, I will say, in this thing, in the sense that on the one hand, like if you are speaking the dominant language, let's say, and then you're speaking with somebody or the language in the place that you are, and then you have some foreign people speaking the language you're speaking, you may try to accommodate in order to make the other person feel more comfortable. For instance, I'm in Italy, I speak Italian. Of course, if I have a friend from another country that speaks Italian, I might try to clean and let's say my language, my slang, and speak, you know, more clearly. But it's true on the other hand that maybe when I'm in a foreign country, then, or I'm in a context where people speak with another language or with another accent, another dialect, I might try to accommodate or mimic maybe, you know, what the people speak so that I feel more accepted. And then definitely I can rely actually with both things. Definitely. I think, yeah, you're totally right.
Wow.
It's a kind of also psychological mechanism, I guess.
I think so. Yeah, it's pretty powerful. And you tend to have really funny stories. And I think it's easy to overlook that there is a psychological component, right?
Yeah. Totally. Because I feel like, you know, especially when we talk about languages, you know, like people feel like very much invested because the language that you speak or the way in which you're capable of expressing yourself, it seems like it's touching your identity, you know, it's touching who you are. Actually, it's very much tied, you know, when you feel like you can't express yourself in a language, it feels like, you know, you have no voice, literally, you know. And so, so yes, there's so much psychological side attached to this.
Yes.
Well, it's true. We can say We can see that, you know, in language classrooms very well. You know, like I always say, maybe it's an exaggeration, but I always say that, you know, to learn a language, 50% of the effort has to do with just overcoming psychological barriers, like thinking, yes, you can do it. And even if you can't express yourself because you're not, you don't have an advanced level of that language, it doesn't mean that you're stupid, you know.
Exactly.
Which sometimes this is, you know, the way in which we feel when we can't express ourselves. And it's funny, also the same, you know, it happens many times, you know, when other people, you know, they speak to you and they feel like you don't manage very well the language, they, you know, it's an instinct to raise their voice. Like if you're deaf, you know, in case you can understand well, hi, my name is, okay, I'm just a first year learner. I'm not deaf. So it's really funny, you know, to see how, you know, our instinct works in those cases.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's actually lots of interesting stories about, because again, there's no, you not being able to speak a language doesn't speak to your level of intelligence, yeah, right? By now, there's no excuse, I think, for people who assume that they're equal just because you may not be able to say certain things. But then there's also the thing that you said that happens where, oh, if I just talk louder, you'll understand the word. It is interesting to see how people now, because I think part of it is people may not know what else to do.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, didn't they just say, oh, just get louder?
I know. Or like, well, in case they didn't understand well. Or they start like making gestures, like really funny. So
yeah. I want pizza.
Well, yeah.
And you're like, well, first of all, you're assuming they understand you even slower. But also, what does...
But also that you understand the system of gestures, because that's also a form of language that actually attached to a different culture.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I remembered. I have a funny story. I don't know if that was funny for my sister, but it was funny for me. Because when she was in the high school, she was dating a guy from Germany. And then, you know, they were communicating in Spanish and in English, I guess. Well, my sister knew a little bit of German, but he didn't speak Italian. So he came to visit. And then I feel like it was the cutest moment ever, because we went to the South and then there were my family. And, you know, and of course, my parents knew only Italian. And so it was very hard to communicate with him, especially when my sister was not around or me.
Right.
And so, but my dad, you know, he did the best, you know, to actually communicate the basic. And so he will make a lot of any sort of gestures to tell him, I don't know, do you want food? It's time to eat. And he will just make, you know, gestures with fingers and the face, you know, like any kind of big, you know, or like rubbing their belly and say, are you angry? Oh, sorry. Angry. So I felt like it was funny for everyone, but I really feel like it was cute. Because, you know, at the end, if you want to communicate with somebody, you will find a way.
Yeah. You know? Like, there's this really cool element of, like, using the tools that you have. So even if it wasn't as, maybe if it felt rudimentary, he probably got point across by rubbing his belly, like,
Exactly. Uh-huh. Those
point
were
to
exactly,
belly, point to mouth.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. The gesture pointing, you know, it always works. Definitely. You know, and then, you know, Italians, we actually use gestures. I mean, we could avoid speaking, making any sound. You know, we can communicate perfectly just making any sort of gesture, and you will understand. There should be like a course on Italian gestures, definitely.
Are you proposing to? Because I'll take it.
Yeah,
I'll take it.
Definitely. Also, well, that also might be complicated because there might be a lot of variations depending
on
regions.
But that's part of it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I would love to. Yeah.
Oh my god.
You could tell if I'm angry, if I'm, you know, happy, just looking at my gestures. Yeah, that's true. You know, it seems a stereotype, but it's really true. Yeah, so I know that when I speak, I try not, like now I'm trying not to move. But when I teach Spanish, I usually don't tell my students where I come from. Mm. But I always feel like at some point they start guessing because I make any sort of gestures, especially when I'm in the middle of, you know, explaining something exciting. I start moving around. But yeah, though, usually speaking, going back to the accent thing, yeah, when I teach in Spanish, it's very hard for them to guess where I come from. Mm-hmm. And I guess it's again for the dancing accent.
So these tapes that your dad made, you told me about them before, but I forget if they're just audio or if they're like videos.
No, they were audios.
Oh, okay.
Because he didn't have at that time a camera, but it was actually a really funny thing because he started just with the desire, I guess, of documenting. So I'm the first child. And so he started since, you know, I started like making sounds, like literally. And so he would play record and say, today is, I don't know, January 6th of, I'm not going to tell you the year. And then he will say, and now.
2000.
Yeah, exactly. I was getting wrong because I was getting in the 19. I was like, no, don't say anything. But anyways, and so, and he will say, I remember this really. He will say, okay, now we have here Michaela and we're, and it's going to tell us something. And I will be like, blah, 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 making sounds, whatever. Then growing up a little bit, so I was, you know, also starting talking. So we will do a lot of things like telling stories together, for instance. And so he will record all this process, or like looking at books with images together, because I could not read. I was super young, but I will just, you know, recognize the weirdest animal ever. So I know a few animals that are just, I don't know if they're extinct yet, but they were so, you know, at that point, not, you know, was not in the range of cow or cat that, you know, because this book had these images. And so he will just pointing and I will say, so he was just, you know, I say documenting this process of speaking, yeah, just, you know, for pure documenting sake. But then what happened? So my parents were both working, and so they, and my mom was also studying at that time. So they didn't really have money to get babysitters. So they decided to change sheets at work. So my dad also was a teacher, and so that time he was teaching in the night school for adults. Mm-hmm. And so my mom will be away during the day, and I will stay with my dad the whole day, and then he will leave at night and my mom will come back, you know. So of course the hours in the day that I was alone without my mom were many. And so there was always a point where I would be like, oh, I want my mom. Where is my mom? And so my dad was trying to invent any sort of thing. Yeah. And so he actually taught me how to record myself. So at some point I will just, you know, play recording, and then I will just start talking and say whatever. So unfortunately these are cassettes. Have them, but I haven't, so I don't have a cassette reader anymore. I think you may have it actually, so maybe when I go back to Italy we can take them back and see what's in there. I might be crying a lot if I hear that. Yeah, so these are probably 6-7 years of recording.
Let's make that a
baby recording.
Let's do it. Yeah. You get them, I will help translate them.
Oh, definitely.
So they can be digital.
Oh, that would be very cool.
Let's do it. I like this project. It's,
yeah,
because it's also about like not just hearing and documenting your first years, but there's this interesting like preservation,
yeah,
effort happening as technology change, the amount of material that people are like amassing, it grows. It really does grow. And it can be kind of cool to see what your first years are like.
Yeah, the change of accent. You can tell that totally.
Actually, I had a question about that. So for folks who don't know about like the North versus the South in terms of Italy, it would be helpful to understand a little bit about the hierarchy, I guess, if we can, if you want to call it that, between folks from the North and the South, and what sort of like accent bias, language, dialect bias that might have existed when you were growing up.
Yeah, so this is actually a very, I think it's a very common phenomenon like everywhere in the world. And I don't know, it's so weird, but usually it's a kind of divide between North and South. You can say the same thing in the US. You can say this everywhere, really. So for some reason, there is always a kind of stigma attached to the South. Well, in the case of Italy, it was the same. It's the same, especially in the past, and had to do with a lot of, I guess, also economic reasons, because the South has been for many, many decades very backward, economically speaking, while the North was very industrialized. So there were more job, you know, and then it was more modernized, you know, so people will have, you know, think about Milan, Venice, but, you know, Milan, the capital of fashion, you know, like all the new products, new thing, you know, so the North was very much, you know, a step forward compared to the South. And also, we can talk in terms of level of education. You know, the South was very backward also in that sense. You know, it was the rate of education was not very high. And we were talking about 50s, 60s, you know, 70s, these years. And so, of course, there is a stigma attached to the people that may be talking only dialect, may not understand Italian, the formal Italian, would say. Even if, historically speaking, this was also true for the North. Like in the North, also you had areas that were not educated, you know. But yeah, so what happened is that in the, especially in the 70s, you know, a lot of people from the South moved to the North to find jobs because there were way more jobs. So, you know, so what happened, it was this massive immigration of people from the South. The North, the people in the North were like, okay, who are all those people that are coming here, you know? And so the first reaction was, or I guess developed, you know, a kind of racist reaction towards people from the South. I guess it's the response that sometimes you have with, you know, otherness. When you meet something different than you, it's probably fear, it's probably, you know, and so, yeah, so people speaking with accent from the South were very much stigmatized. And to a point, they still are. So that's something that was really, you could really feel. Like, I didn't know about that earlier, like just recently. So I feel like I felt this kind of feelings, you know, against people from the South. But I, like the baby me, you know, could not really make sense of this. Yeah. While in recent times, I was talking to my mom, and then she told me about some, you know, some kind of racist episodes. I don't know if racism is really the word that works there, but definitely discrimination that I was not aware. Like, for instance, there were, she told me that there were some bakeries that they had like piece of papers, posters saying we don't sell bread to Southern people. And so, and my mom was really shocked. She, at the time, she was 21, you know, and then, and my grandpa was like, was super worried. He was like, where are you? Where did you go? Come back home, you know, like, you know, what place are you in? You know, so that was, so I didn't know until recently about all these episodes. So for me, it makes sense of a lot of things, you know. So it helps me making sense of a lot of, I don't know, I don't like episodes, like really day to day, you know, dynamics, I would say. So personally speaking, I felt I was never really integrated in the city in the North where I was born. While my sister, she's 9 years younger than me, and she found a very different environment. And so now we're getting close to my age. No, I'm joking. But so it was a completely different. It was another generation. You know, people were more used to it. So things changed.
Yeah.
But I guess there's something that worked with me. And I think kind of became a power for me in the sense that I feel like I can adapt in different places now. You know, I'm not very much attached to any particular place. So I can, it took a lot of time to kind of make this work, actually. But I feel like I could make home different places, yeah. You know. So I feel like, I've been away from home, from my parents' house, you know, for about, I can't tell that.
2 years.
For about 2 years. But, you know, so I remember my mom at the beginning was like, don't you miss me? You know, you're so young. Don't you miss me? With a young me, I was like, missing is not a feeling that I have, you know. But, there was something besides the romanticism or besides the nihilism.
Yeah.
There was something true. In a sense, I guess if you are used to since a very young age, you know, to navigate different situations in terms of, you know, culture and language and, you know, roots, really, like the places that you call home. You know, I feel like at some point you will always feel like you're missing something, but at the same time you feel like, you know, that, you know, you can really adapt,
mm-hmm.
I guess.
Yes, you're very versatile. It's true, though. It is. It's true. Depending on where you are, you're just like, I'm here, man.
Seems that easy, but whoa. It's really not. Like, you know, it's still like you still have moments that where you feel like, okay, who am I? Where I come from?
Yeah.
You know, what's the place that you call home? I don't know. So for me, it's really an impossible place. It's like where my parents come from, but I actually never lived there. It was just summer. But, you know, it's like where your family comes from. You know, it's something that you feel like in your blood, you know, food and things, you know, specific memories of your childhood. But that's an impossible home. Because again, I will never go back and live because I never actually, you know, built a life there. You know, it was always a place I had to leave. You know.
Yeah. Wow. I think there's going to be a lot of people who relate to that. I was thinking actually a little bit about the conversation we had with the team from the Patagonia Project.
Yeah.
Because, you know, there's a documentary that was produced, you know, around several of the families in that community in Argentina. And there were some really interesting parallels where mm-hmm. they felt very, very, very tied to South Africa, even though most of them had never even been there.
Yeah.
They haven't really spoken to family members who'd been there. They just knew it.
Yeah.
Like, it was in their blood, and they, like, it was very, very clear to them that they were South African.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's really kind of an amazing experience to witness because that's not something, because I'm, you know.
Michigander.
Yeah, I'm a Michigander. And
Do you feel Michigander?
I mean, not necessarily. I mean, I don't know if that's how I would phrase it, but like this idea of where is home,
yeah.
It's very clear because I'm like, it's over there.
Yeah.
And I can go back. Like, family, most of my family's still there. So it's very clear to me how to trace myself back to that spot. So seeing when people say, well, I moved around a lot, or my family's from a place that I was never really in for any length of time except to visit. It's such an interesting thing to witness. And there are a lot of people with similar stories.
Oh, yeah. It's plenty of stories like this out there. And then they're so fascinating and so dramatic. But also, you know, so the experience is also that, you know, they felt like their home is somewhere else because in the place where they were born and lived, they never felt like they belonged to that place. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, if they ever go back there, you know, where their family comes from, they also will be foreigner. because they will have, for instance, a foreign accent, mm-hmm. or they will not know, you know, basic daily habits, for instance. So they people will feel like always this idea, you know, that your home, it's somewhere in the world, but it's actually it's inside you, you know. Yeah, this is very dramatic. But also this, I'm glad that you mentioned this Patagonia, the Patagonia story, because, you know, if you think about like worldwide, you know, the system of international relationships, the history, the world history is full of their stories, you know. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, today there are still wars, you know, among countries, legitimated by this feeling of not belonging or belonging, you know. So it seems something, I know, so it seems something silly that you leave in the first person, you're like, okay, don't be dramatic, you know. But if you think about that, this feeling moved to a national level, this actually, you know, provokes wars, conflicts, like, mm-hmm. you know, that have been on for generations. So this is a serious matter again, you know. So you think that, you know, the individual level is not, it's just a bubble. No, it's just right, always immediately connected to the global world.
Yeah.
You know, so like my story is just a little story, but, you know, it has to do with the people that from the South and that in those years they had to move to the North to find job. And then they, you know, as a whole generation, they found like problems. And so, you know, after those experiences, there are political situations that take place, you know? So, yeah, so I feel like it's really important. And at the same time, this need of, you know, finding that I belong to somewhere, you know, they actually, again, they provoke nationalisms, you know, any sort of, again, racism might be a cause of this, you know, because they're like, okay, this is my road. You don't belong here. You know, you're taking my place, my spot. But again, it comes from, I guess, a fear and a need, a human need of knowing. Of course, I'm not justifying, but I feel like if we move like to a psychological understanding of this phenomenon, it moves from the need, the basic need of people of belonging and the fear that they have, you know, when they meet with somebody that's different.
Mm-hmm. And then that might challenge that.
Yeah.
Or encroach totally. On some territory that's quote unquote theirs.
Yeah.
And not ours.
Yeah.
Right.
And then at the basis of that, it's just pure fear of losing, you know, what belongs to you.
Right. What you think.
What you think, you think belongs to you. Because, mm-hmm. so then if you go to the root of this phenomena, you might think that, you know, it's probably something about the human nature feeling like you belong to some place. I don't know. Maybe. Mm. Or may not. Or maybe not. But it depends what you think about your places. Because it can be a very small community, but if it can be the whole world. If you think like the whole world is your place, you know.
Yeah, and
that will make a lot of difference.
It really does. It really does. I mean, things like that have been happening. I mean, like you pointed out, historically, where someone decides this is my territory, and that's where you get lots of these questions about, you know, legitimacy of the other. Why are you here?
Yeah.
You don't belong. We don't serve bread to Southerners, or you know, we don't sell baked goods to Southerners because, you know, their money is not good enough because of who they are. You know, you start to do all these things and, you know, we all have, you know, biases and, you know, that's fine. It's when you start to treat people differently.
Yeah.
Terribly, horribly, that really you need to deal with that. Yeah. And so even if the basis is, if we're saying that the basis of these things are fear, hate, you know, desperation for belonging, if we're saying that that's the root cause, mm-hmm. then we really need to look at that, analyze that, right?
Yeah, where does it come from?
Where does it come from? And then how do you get to a place where, like, you understand that it's okay for different people to be different, to sound different, to not speak the same language as you, that it should be more about teamwork in terms of, like, connecting and communicating and what, you know, that's just my opinion.
Totally. You know. And then I still think, you know, of course, individuals have their own responsibilities, but I still think it has, you know, the biggest responsibility still, you know, in the world, like in the bigger, you know, in the way in which you think, you as a general, you as a politicians, the people that rule the world, you know, like how do you think a nation, a place, how do you think, you know, borders among places, the national property, you know, how people, citizens, you know, live in their place. So if a person feels like, you know, the strong need of protecting what they have, it means they have, you know, a very precarious life. So who made that life precarious? Who made that person so fearful? I mean, I don't want to do make it this too big, but of course, we're talking about, you know, economic relationships, political relationships, you know, a system of international relationships where countries are, you know, in a different position, in a different economic, have different economic and political powers, etc. So again, every time we talk about languages and, you know, dialect, accents, it's not just a linguistic phenomenon. It comes from, you know, a whole world.
Oh, my God. Like, you're hitting, I need that a sound effect button right now.
An applause.
No, seriously, language is one element of this conversation, and you know, that's the one that we're super interested in, because language is super revealing, and because it's sort of integrated into basically everything, it hides in a really interesting way. So anyway, you're hitting the all right, let me stop, because I don't know how to use this well enough to touch on all these effects buttons.
But that's beautiful. Thank you.
Back to what we were talking about. Yes. Back to what we were talking about. Language is a really powerful, some of the power that is derived from language is in its ability to be hidden. Mm-hmm. So, you know, part of what we're talking about is super, I think, super important, super interesting for folks. And there's some really interesting parallels we can draw from, like, your story being sort of a microcosm.
More with Michaela in part 2.